following lecture by Imam W. Din Muhammad is entitled A New Mind on Race, Pride, and Opportunity, A Growing View of the Direction for African Americans, Part 2. Recorded October 4th, 1992, in Robbins, Illinois.
So we have people who are working for the global interest among our women and among our men. And with the job situation the way it is, with the economy drastically changed from the time 30 years or more behind us, what I mean by that is that 30 years or more behind us, America was a privileged nation on this earth. A privileged nation on this earth. America and her European counterparts were doing with this globe pretty much whatever they wanted to do. But with the emergence of what we call the third world nations and the rise of Russia and China as superpowers, in time that began to change. And it wasn't until recently that America began to feel the economic effect of this change. Now she has to compete and not bulldoze her way around. She has to accept to compete with the nations of the world, for the markets of the world, instead of bulldozing her way around. So as a consequence, we are having poor economic times in America. So we all have to understand the slow up of industry and the drainage on jobs in light of what has happened drastically to change the economic order of this planet. And those African American leaders who just come to you and appeal to your hurt, appeal to your woes, appeal to your need to cry, or charge somebody else with all your problems, they are not doing a service to you or to us. They are doing a terrible disservice. And they are to blame much for the bad state of our race. Because as I'm addressing the original potential, I'm going to bring out a point that's very clearly stated in Scripture, if we can just read it and understand it, and that is that man is not essentially or most importantly a physical entity. Most importantly, he is a soul. He is a spiritual entity. And the fate of his existence is determined not so much by his physical circumstances or by his opportunity to learn his intellectual circumstances, but the fate is determined by his spiritual circumstances. He is most vulnerable spiritually. Let me give you an example or a little illustration. The average trickster that wants to pull a trick on you, they want you to give up your money or do something, and he knows that if he allows you to be still with your mind and your soul, that he won't be able to pull this trick off. So the average trickster, what he tries to do? He tries to either divert the attention, redirect, or direct away the attention of your thinking from what he want to pull over. Or he try to convince you, most often he'll try to convince you that he's acceptable. So he comes with voice, language, and expression to get into your soul. He wants to touch your emotion and get you to feeling good. Right? And some of the biggest tricksters you'll find are in churches and in mosques and in synagogues and in Catholic churches. They in all of them. Don't think just because he's quiet and ghostly looking in there that he ain't working on your spirit. He's working on your spirit. Now, I'm not saying that we should suspect religion, suspect the church, suspect the synagogue, suspect the mosque. No, I'm not saying it for that point. But I'm saying that to tell you that this particular vulnerability, it is so universal, it is universal, that we find in even the holiest quarters of the society, same vulnerability, same tricksters. Same vulnerability, same tricksters. So if our politicians, if our preachers in these churches, and many of them are guilty of this, if our ministers in the mosque, we are a small minority, we're not responsible for all this trouble in the society because our numbers haven't multiplied that much. But if our numbers continue to multiply, and if we can say we have 30 mosques in Robin, if we don't straighten up, brothers and sisters, we'll be charged equally. We'll be as equally guilty. Because I can go to mosque right now, to masjid. You all speak in Arabic now. I say mosque. I can go to masjid right now and find the con man delivering the prayer, giving the prayer, leading the service, giving the khutbah, giving the service, doing the. I can go to mosque right now, and I find him doing the same thing. He's going through the door of your vulnerability, through your spiritual opening. So in spite of great opportunity, we find that we are not advancing in this country as a people in spite of great opportunity. I'm not the only one addressing this. That's why I call it a new mind, a growing view on race and opportunity. We find two or three intellectuals in California. Two of them I know are professors in California. They're addressing this problem. One have a book that's very popular right now. His last name is Steele. What is his first name? Shelby Steele. He has a book right now that's very popular selling on our people, where he identifies this problem. Addresses this problem, he comes up with this answer, that in spite of opportunity, of unheard of opportunity, never have we enjoyed the amount of opportunity that we have today. Since we've been in America, there's never been a time we had more opportunity. No. I got a correspondence, piece of correspondence with me right now. One of our Muslim brothers started a spice business, spice exporting business. About 7 or 8 years or more ago. Recently, he merged with another one, and they combined their businesses. Now, they're exporting spices overseas. And he has sent me a letter telling me that his distributors have agreed. And they're now approaching the number five, going to be five of them. And they will grow, inshallah. God bless his business, they will grow. They have agreed every 6 months they are going to make a contribution to Imam Debbie Dean Muhammad's ministry of $2,000. Each distributor, every 6 months. That's $4,000 that they have pledged without me even knowing them. I haven't even responded to the correspondence. I still haven't. I just opened it today. Something told me open that. You know, those antennas go up like the little insect antennas go up, you know. Something said, open that. So I opened it, and that's what I found, good news. So just imagine now, if five of them donate $4,000 a year, that's $20,000 a year. $20,000 a year. So that will greatly improve the funds in our account for our business, for the business of the ministry. As you know, we don't only support my activities, but we support also the activities of productive imams or ministers in our community. And we support our schools. And we support qualifying individuals who suffer misfortune or who have a desire to go back to school. So it depends on how much we have available. We support a lot. We are there as a charity. though it is specifically for my support, for the support of my ministry, we see it as a charity. It used to be called the MACA Fund, Muslim American Community Assistance Fund. Now it's called W. Dean Muhammad Ministry. Yes. But the way it will be used will not change. Only the name has changed. Name has changed so that it will more clearly convey the truth. That's it. Yeah. But I had people questioning me. What are you doing with our money, brother and ma'am? Where's our money? Where's our Mecca fund? And I didn't introduce it that way. When I introduced it as a fund that would support Imam W.D. Muhammad and his works. And that the surplus we had at the end of the year, or at any time, will go to others. Needy, qualifying persons or sources, you see? But it gave us problems. And then I found that some of the overseas people, they were misreading it too. So it forced me to go out and do what my mind wanted to do all the time, and that was identified as W.D. Muhammad's ministry. As you know, over the last 10 years or more now, what I've been doing is making it a point to establish myself, my office, my work, as independent of any other mosque, administration, whatever. Independent of it. So, and you know what gave me the freedom to do this? I'm kind of going off the subject a little bit. You know what gave me the freedom to do this? I say the freedom to do it because it was in me to do it. I wanted to do it. I thought it would be best for me and best for all of our people, for all of the Muslims. But what gave me the freedom to do it was when I kept reading over and over again what Allah says of Muhammad, glorified is Allah, highly glorified, and the prayers and peace be on Muhammad. Allah says, Muhammad is no regulator of your affairs. You know, the person you choose to be a regulator of your special interests should not be burdened with national responsibility. You can't accept national responsibility if you're going to be tied down with local administration, responsibility to local administration. No way! That's why the president of the United States, he doesn't run the Illinois. He doesn't run Chicago. He can't. If he tried to do that, he'd be finished overnight. He'd be finished. He'd go babbling out his way right on out of the United States. He'd go to Mexico or something. Yeah, he couldn't tell you. So we like to have one man. That's how come many churches are so successful. They have a preacher in there who stands in the place of God like the Pope or somebody, and he just takes everybody's problem on himself. And that's what Hagar's children like. They want somebody to accept responsibility and tell me what to do. Yeah, okay, you got the responsibility, now tell me what to do, you know. That's Hagar's children. But you see what God did for Hagar? Made Sarah throw her out in the desert. Say, now, see who you're going to ask to accept responsibility. Allahu Akbar. But again, that's a tendency that is in us because of conditioning, the bad circumstances of the offer. I'm going to conclude this in a few minutes. But let me go back to my point, that this particular position that I'm taking is not a Muslim position. It is not W.D. Muhammad's position. It is a new view that we are hearing when we listen to people like Shelby Steele and many others, especially in California, Thomas Sowell, and others. He's not the only one. There's about three or four of them just in that area, professors, intellectuals, who have that view. But in politics, we have those who have that view. In the Republican Party, we have those who have that view. Now, the African Americans in the Republican Party, they turn most of us off because we are gospel Democrats.
Yes, sir.
We are gospel Democrats.
That's it.
We are Jesus Christ Democrats. Peace be upon Jesus Christ the prophet. We are gospel Democrats, you know. So we follow the Democrats like we should be following Allah or following Muhammad or following Jesus Christ if we're Christians. Peace be upon them. Yeah. So, you know, we follow the Democrats blindly. Whatever is Democratic is sanctioned automatically. Especially if it's contrasted or put in conflict with what is Republican. Right away, what's Democratic is right, what's Republican is wrong. And we forget that when we were freed from slavery, it was Republican Party and Republican leadership that was promoting the acceptance of our freedom and promoting the emancipation that we eventually came to realize. Yes, it was Republican. And we forget that some of the cruelest states to the African-American people or to the black American were the Democratic states of the South. They were solidly Democratic. Solidly Democratic. They was as Democratic as we are now. And they believed in lynching blacks and sending you to kangaroo courts. Yes? So we should sober up a little bit. Do some rethinking, reexamination. Yes. Now, what I want to say to you in concluding this talk is that opportunity is always here. I don't care how bad our circumstances are, opportunity is always here, especially if everybody is put in the same situation. Now, if you're in a poor country like Liberia or a few others, if you have the conscience that we are trying to promote with this address, your situation in Liberia cannot be worse than anybody else's situation in Liberia. It will be as good and better than anybody else's situation in Liberia. I don't care if they have business accomplishments or political accomplishments. Once you have this kind of thinking in your mind, once you have this mind, then you're put on an equal footing with all of them. It's just a matter of time, and you'll catch up with them. You can compete with them even where you are today. Even if I had nothing, if I had no money, if I had no backers like you, see, I'm a powerful little man. Yeah, I'm a powerful little man. I got a lot of backers. I got people that will just feed me, clothe me, romance me too if I let them. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a powerful little man because of the support I get from you, because of your support. But if I didn't have any of your support, if I had nothing, I would never be sad. I would never be downhearted. I would have hope. My face would be bright when I wake up in the morning because I know my potential. See, what set us back more than anything else wasn't the denial of physical opportunity. It was the denial of a sense of value for our person, for my own black self. What the white man was saying and doing was so powerful. He was the speaker. His voice was heard. His opinions were accepted. Even in education, his opinions were established and accepted. I mean, the opinion of the races now, that minority that imposed their will on the majority of American people and put us in bondage and kept us in bondage. It was a minority. Don't ever think all white people were responsible for that. They weren't. It only take a minority. Look what one man Hitler did for Germany. Eh? One man Hitler and his core of supporters. Look what that small number did for Germany and the world. Eh? Look at what small Roman, ancient Roman Empire did for the world. There were a small number of people, weren't they? You look at the Roman Empire, its original territory is very small, like the islands of Japan almost, right? They're bigger, but you know what I mean, relatively very small. Not big, not a big mass. They didn't have a big land mass. But because of their enthusiasm, their fervor for what they wanted to achieve, they had a spiritual force working for them that was much stronger than the spiritual force working in others that weren't turned on like that. See? So because of that, they were successful in influencing minds and conquering people, defeating nations, and eventually they commanded the whole globe. Great Britain once said, "The sun never sets on my empire." That's what Great Britain, this is recorded, that Great Britain said, "The sun never sets on my empire," meaning that they had established territories, possessions, lands under them all the way around the world. All over the world. Sun never sets on their empire. So don't think it'll take many, it takes only a few. Right now, the state of our people that we cry over, that we moan over, that we feel downhearted about, is the responsibility of a handful of people. If we could execute them tonight, tomorrow, we'd be in good shape. But we can't execute them tonight because I can't identify all of them. If I could identify... Believe me, if I could identify all of them, I think they'd be executed tonight. But I'm afraid I'll just hit a few and the problem will still be here. National achievement. What makes a person have race pride or race arrogance? Race arrogance. Racial arrogance or race arrogance. What makes the people have that kind of arrogance? It is their national achievement. The European people weren't always having racism. They weren't the people that came later. They became racist after they came into great national glory. Then they thought themselves to be the special people of God, that they were better than everybody else. Now, before them, there was the Aryans of ancient history. The Aryans of ancient history of the Far East, they also thought that they were the superior race. Why? Because they were drunk on their own power. They became wine drinkers of their own power and glory, and they thought that they were special, that they were inherently different, that they were better than other people by birth or by creation. Now, we know that this also took place in the religious quarters of society, where men studying the wisdom, divine wisdom, revelation in its hidden secrets, they thought that they had come into something nobody else had, nobody else could get. So they thought that they were the special creation of God, and that people didn't have that were not equal to them. In the history of the West, we find that it was the church that first established its arrogance over not only other societies, but over its own subjects. It established its arrogance over its own subjects. It didn't even allow all of its citizens to become educated because it determined that certain citizens were not even created for that excellence or for that opportunity. So you shouldn't waste money and time on them. Now, this is not to attack the church, because we find that same mentality also in the Muslim society today. There are Muslim countries that we can go to right today, and they treat the common man like he's animal property, like he's just property, animal, domestic animal. They treat him like he's a domestic animal. They will not spend money to improve the total lot of their citizenry. No, they're not interested in that. They focus on a special few, and they spend money on them, and monies that they spend on those that are not in that special few, they are the select few, they spend money on them because it is a necessity. The person they value as a common laborer, they will spend enough money on him according to necessity. The person they value as a driver or as an errand boy or a pager or whatever, or a secretary or whatever he is, if he's outside of that select group or that elected group, They will spend money on him according to necessity. Only according to necessity. Now, if he comes into their group, then he's treated differently. If he proves acceptable to their group, and how does he prove acceptable to their group? He had to first worship them as little gods. When he acknowledged that they are little gods, then they will bring him into their group and raise him as one of their children. He'll become the divine child. But first, he has to show willingness to accept them as little gods. He has to do ruku to them. And occasionally a sejda. Sejda means complete prostration like the Africans did when the Pope came over to Africa. The Africans laid their body out on the ground like dead snakes. And I don't care if they hear that. I'd like some to know that I saw them as dead snakes. Stretching their bodies out on the ground before the Pope. Now, thank God, he was a decent Pope. He disparaged that practice. That was the present Pope, I believe. I believe it was the present Pope. Yeah. Yeah, he, after that happened, I remember reading about it in the paper. He discouraged that, you know. So when he came over, he didn't prostrate. He just kneeled down and kissed the ground. Yeah, he kneeled down and kissed the ground. He got up. They threw their bodies out like they were dead. Dead snakes. So a country becomes big-headed after it has realized great achievement. Not all countries will become big-headed, like not all individuals will become big-headed or be spoiled by their successes. But we find many individuals will be spoiled by their successes. And likewise, many nations are spoiled by their successes. I remember hearing on the news once, and I was a young man. I don't believe I'd even come out of my teens. I couldn't have. No, I was in my teens, early teens at that. I remember hearing on the news, America saying, it was through the voice of the commentator or the person on the radio, I can't recall right now, I can't identify the person. Even at that time, I don't think I was that interested in news and current issues and affairs to try to remember whether the person was a government person or whatever, or something else. I don't remember that. But I remember the person saying this. I heard this person with my own young ears. He said, we can police the world. Now, isn't that an ugly statement for any citizen to make anywhere on this planet? Even if you could, why would you want to say that? We can police the world. So that tells us that if people get big-headed and get a lot of power, many of them can be influenced to the point that they want to become God for everybody else on this earth.